October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, but in Alaska, raising awareness and working to end violence against women and children needs to happen every day of every month. Alaska also has a growing human and sex trafficking problem. I'm Lori Townsend, and today we're discussing the bleak reality that Alaska has some of the highest assault numbers in the nation. Why are Alaskan women being victimized at such an alarming rate? What is the fallout for children in violent family situations? What can and must be done to stop the epidemic of fear and victimization? We're talking about those issues, and we want to hear from you today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Providence Imaging Center, with its newest center in Soldotna, offering CT scans, MRI, ultrasound, and digital X-ray to residents on the Kenai Peninsula. Learn more at provimaging.com. And by ERA. For more than 40 years, ERA Alaska's planes have carried the stories of Alaska. ERA Alaska, bringing Alaskans together. More at flyera.com. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. In 2012, Alaska ranked first in the nation for violence against children. I looked up stats for murder of women. The last that I could find was from 2003. My guest today, I'm sure, can give us more current stats, but we were leading the nation then. The state also ranks at or near the top in rape and sexual assault. Looking at some of the recent surveys in the state, we find that in the Matsu Valley, 46 women out of 100 have experienced intimate partner violence, 53 experienced sexual violence or intimate partner violence. This year's survey in Ketchikan and other parts of the state had similar results. We could keep throwing numbers out that paint the statistical picture, but that doesn't tell us why or what can be done about it. And understanding the why is important to working to lower these numbers. Here to help us is Melissa Emmel. Melissa is the Deputy Director of Abused Women's Aid in Crisis, or AWAKE, the shelter here in Anchorage. Hi, Melissa. Thanks for being with us today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And also Sergeant Kathy Lacey. Sergeant Lacey is a detective who is the head of the Anchorage Police Department's Vice Unit. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's first talk about what's known about the why. Melissa, when you talk with women in the shelter, are there common situations that emerge?
Certainly. Most people that end up at AWAKE stores are people who are experiencing dangerous levels of abuse, so abuse that is physically harmful to them and to their children. They have very few options of places to turn, and so they end up at our doors.
Mm-hmm. And in the more than 10 years that you've been with AWAKE, what's changed, if anything, within family dynamics? Are you seeing changes in how behavior builds and escalates into violence, or do the patterns seem to stay the same?
The patterns are similar in that abuse is a learned behavior, and so those choices to make, threats and controlling actions, to use violence to keep somebody in your control are things that are common. What I have seen an increase of over the years is a co-occurrence of alcoholism, substance abuse, and sort of other family stressors that make a bad situation worse.
You can join our conversation today if you want to share your own story or ask questions of our guests this morning on Talk of Alaska. The call-in number statewide is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling from the Anchorage area, it's 550-8422, 550-8422, or you can email us talk@alaskapublic.org. We're also not just talking about family violence. Sergeant Lacey, what's known about the rates of violence against women in Alaska that's perpetrated by people other than intimate partners?
Well, something to keep in mind is that the vast majority of women that are working in the sex trade in Alaska, if you look at their backgrounds, they came from an abusive background. That's a reality. They start by somebody sexually assaulting them, abusing them emotionally, physically, and then ultimately they end up in the sex trade. So I think we need to look, always look back at that, those initial trigger factors, which is a history of abuse to begin with.
Well, there's myths around some of that, as you well know. Sometimes people are led to believe that women get into the sex trade because they feel like it, because it's easy money or some other reasons along those lines. What's the reality in the years you've been working the streets and you know what the myths are and what the realities are? What are the realities there?
The realities is initially the average age of entry into prostitution is 13 to 14 years old. So you're not talking about consenting adults, which is usually what you hear. Oh, they're consenting adults. The women are in it for the business. They're in it to make money. Most of those women started as juveniles. As I already mentioned, they have an abusive background. It's a very degrading, humiliating, violent line of work to be in. It isn't anything like it's portrayed on television. Usually the trafficker will keep 100% of the money that any woman brings him. It's not a 50-50 split. It's a very controlling. It's just a very violent lifestyle. And if you hear these women's stories, you dispel those notions very quickly that it's just a way to make money and it's consenting adults.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about violence against women today. 1-800-478-8255 is the number if you'd like to join us or you have questions of your own. 550-8422 is the number in Anchorage. How, Sergeant Lacey, would you describe human trafficking? Because I think we're not only talking about prostitution when we talk about human trafficking, are we?
We're primarily talking about sexual exploitation. And human trafficking is defined as having someone, coercing someone by either fraud or a form of coercion into sexual exploitation. It is prostitution, and not all prostitution is human trafficking. But if you're talking about an underage female, it is sex trafficking. So it's really a way of somebody profiting from a woman. And I use woman more because we see a lot more women involved in prostitution than we do boys and men. They are there, but we just see the vast majority of them are females. So it is that line of work where somebody is profiting off of them, and they're doing it in a way where they're either physically beating them, they're coercing them, they're threatening their family, they're threatening to expose them. That's what human trafficking is. It's a commercial sex act that is induced by force, fraud, or coercion.
And let's talk about how young women get caught up in trafficking. I've heard that there are actual recruiters that go out to villages to lure young women into the city. Is this true? And if it is it only women? Are they also recruiting or luring boys and young men in?
Boys and young men are involved in the sex trade. There's no doubt about it. We just don't see it as often. They're often traded on the internet. You very rarely. I've seen them actually walking the streets in a traditional form of prostitution twice in the 15 years that I've been doing this. They're usually traded over the internet to known clients. So they're just not as visible, but they are there. And what's important for people to realize is it's not some boogeyman that's going to jump out and snatch a girl off the street and stuff her in the back of the car. It's going to be a guy that's going to offer to take a girl to a mall, to maybe get her nails done, maybe give her alcohol, maybe give her marijuana, come to my house for a party. It's very insidious. It's not the kind of thing like the movie Taken where somebody's going to jump out and forcibly kidnap you. They start very willingly.
Mm-hmm. Melissa, what have your observations been at Awake for young women that come into shelter out of the crisis of sex trafficking or human trafficking?
What we often see is very similar to what Kathy described, that the young women will feel like they're in a relationship with their trafficker. It was someone who maybe swooped in at a moment that they were the most vulnerable. Maybe they were already homeless, had come to Anchorage from possibly a rural area to stay with family, and then that situation turned bad and they were on the streets. possibly accessing services already at Awake or someplace like Covenant House. And then their trafficker approached them with a place to stay, safety, food, basic needs. And then that turned into swapping those things for sex with that person initially, which then sort of over time turned into that person, you know, offering them to friends for sex. And, you know, often these young women don't have much of a concept of what a healthy relationship is already. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy to convince them and kind of push those boundaries.
Are there recruiters going out to rural Alaska? Is that true?
Yes. We had a case where that's exactly what the trafficker did. He went to rural Alaska specifically to recruit.
So give us an idea of how this happens. What someone just targets a village at random, or what do you know about what the kind of the setup is?
It usually happens by they have, oftentimes they have already recruited somebody from that village, and they will go back with that particular person. And she'll say, oh, I have a friend. She may be here working and maybe feeling isolated, which is what he's going to do, is make her feel isolated. She may recruit somebody, so she's got somebody to be with from her own village. So that is another ploy that they'll use. It often may not be the trafficker that does the recruiting, but it'll be he'll send another girl or woman to do the recruiting for him, very non-threatening. Hey, I have a boyfriend. He's got a place for you to stay. Come to town. You know, you can hang out with us. That's how it starts.
1-800-478-8255 is the number to call statewide. 550-8422 is the Anchorage number. And you can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. How often are young women or young men who are recruited and brought into either Anchorage or Fairbanks or other urban settings in the state, how often are they found and returned home?
That's a tough one. Because what you have to realize is that is also one of the threats that are used to keep them in line. I'm going to go home and tell everybody in your village what you were doing here. I'm going to tell everybody in your family. We have had some women go home. One of them went home and very shortly thereafter committed suicide. It's difficult. It's difficult for them to get out of the life regardless, but it's very difficult. You can't just put them on an airplane and send them home. That's not going to work. In order to successfully transition out of it, it requires a lot of counseling, a lot of support in the way of substance abuse support. It just runs the gamut of the kind of services that they need. So I don't have exact statistics of successful cases where women have returned back to their village. I'm sure they're there. I just don't know about them.
Melissa?
I think it's important to recognize the level of shame that victims of these crimes feel. If we're talking about domestic violence, sexual assault, or human trafficking, victims are told by the abuser that the abuse and the victimization is their fault, and they begin to internalize that. And so if you think a problem is something that you're creating and that you're dirty and disgusting and you deserve it, you're very unlikely to reach out to people that you love, that you've been isolated from, and tell them about what's going on. And so I think that shame is an important concept to understand.
It sounds like classic brainwash techniques. Is that what we're essentially talking about?
It is, and it's a little. It's even more complicated than that. It's all of those rolled into one. There's a trauma bond that occurs between the victim and the trafficker. As Melissa mentioned, the shame, Stockholm syndrome kicks in, the domestic violence cycle. It's very complicated, and people ask, why didn't they just walk away? You know, they're not chained there. Why didn't they just walk away? They don't feel like they can walk away. They don't feel like they have other options. It's just a difficult lifestyle to get out of once you're in it. They feel like they're stuck.
Even though Alaska has such a tremendously high number of women who have been subjected to some form of violence, mm-hmm. either from an intimate partner or from someone else, it's astounding that we're looking at least 3/4 of women in the state who have experienced that. In my experience talking to women throughout the years, I was also a peer counselor at a safe house many years ago in northern Wisconsin. And it seems in just sort of informal interviews with women that it's hard to find anyone who hasn't at least been made to feel very uncomfortable, at the very least, by someone at some point in their life. So we're talking about really widespread, everything from very minor trauma to tremendous rates of violence and murder. How do you explain to people that the few that fortunately have escaped that kind of situation in their life, how do you help them understand what we're talking about? Because no one starts out taking a beating and going back. It's as we're talking about, it's sort of like a subtle brainwashing technique, but where's the starting point? I think that it's important to try and understand how this starts so that people can, you know, gain a deeper knowledge of it and then hopefully respond in a way that's helpful.
I think it's important to think about, in terms of domestic violence, that healthy relationships and abusive relationships start out the same way. There's intense emotions, there's love, there's often quick involvement where the people are spending a lot of time together, spending less time with friends and family. And that happens in a healthy relationship as well. And then slowly the abuser uses those intense emotions and that natural isolation that happens at the beginning of a relationship to their benefit. And they start to subtly take more and more control over a person. And then by the time that abuse starts to happen, that person is already isolated from their support system. And so it becomes easier to exert more control, use more abusive tactics if necessary, and it becomes less likely that person is going to reach out for help. And again, always inserting that idea of this is your fault, that it's happening. If only you were better, if things were more perfect when I got home, this level of abuse wouldn't happen. And people begin to internalize that because, again, that support system is missing and there's no one telling them this isn't healthy, this isn't normal.
Are there efforts underway, especially in Alaska, where we have such a tremendous problem in this area, are there efforts underway within the schools to help young people realize the distinction between a healthy relationship and one that's going down a path that's going to be increasingly controlling and negative? Because it's when you have no point of reference other than your own parents, and when kids are young, you know, lots of times they want to do, even if they have great healthy parents, they oftentimes think they want to do the opposite of what they observe at home. You know, it's just immaturity and trying to find your own way and figuring out what being independent means. Are there programs in schools now that are helping kids understand these?
There are. The school district has a social and emotional learning curriculum, and that's in the Anchorage School District. And there's also a bullying curriculum that they're using. Additionally, AWAKE and STAR, which is Standing Together Against Rape, we both have educators that are frequently out in the schools doing presentations so that kids know that there's resources and that there's crisis line numbers and places that they can feel empowered to reach out to if they're noticing things in their family that are abusive. We want kids to know that there's options for them to reach out and get help and trusted adults. But I think beyond looking at the schools, we need to empower each community member to feel a responsibility to do something and to feel an urgency to do something. This is life and death, and people need to be stepping up on an individual basis right now.
Do you think that that's part of the problem? Alaska is known for, okay, people like privacy, they don't want to be bothered, they don't want to bother others. Is that part of the problem, though, that people are not getting involved enough?
I think that definitely holds true, especially in rural Alaska, it holds true. In addition to what Melissa was saying, I think that we need to expand on the, I'm going to plug the Choose Respect campaign right now, choosing respect, and then also as a society, how we're sexualizing our youth. You know, we're putting so much emphasis, and between the music videos and the television shows and the movies, how, you know, we're giving this message to young girls that their body is what they have, and their body is a commodity. And that's a very dangerous place to go with young kids. And I think we need more of a presence combating that image, that, you know, that pimp, when we use the word pimping, it means improving. You know, pimp your ride. We're selling these kids a message that this pimping and hoeing is a cool thing. It's something to be involved in. The rap videos and the movies are all about it. It's a very cool thing to do. And our voice isn't out there saying it isn't cool at all. It's humiliating. It's degrading. And I think we need to expand on that program that Awake and Star are doing in the schools and make sure they're in all the schools, because my understanding is you don't go to all schools.
Right.
You know, I think we need to be getting kids at a younger age and giving them the bigger picture.
1-800-478-8255. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation or if you have questions for our guests. 550-8422 is the number in Anchorage. 550-8422. How do you recommend, when you're talking to people about getting involved, when you see something, how should they get involved? Because as you both know, you've probably heard stories. I know I did. When I was a peer counselor, I would hear people say, look, I tried to help. I saw this guy beating up his girlfriend in the alley, and I jumped in, and the next thing I knew, both of them were on me, beating on me. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, the men that I've talked to that have relayed stories like that have said, you know, I'll never get involved again because I don't get it. Apparently she wanted to be beat up. Well, of course that's not the case, as you know.
Right.
But we know that a lot of times women feel like if they don't respond in kind, they're going to get it worse later. And so what do you tell people about how to engage in a way that doesn't put themselves at risk but can help someone? What should they do?
I think an important thing to acknowledge when we're talking about all these huge statistics about violence is that there are more Alaskans who are not hurting others than there are that are causing this kind of violence. There are more of us out there. And so if we each take some personal responsibility, the rates are going to start to go down. And with that, we need to acknowledge that we all have different personalities and different styles of doing things. And not all of us are going to go and directly intervene with violence when we see it, and it may not be safe. And there's other options. For example, you could just distract from the situation. You see a fight, you're in a crowded public place. Is there a way to create a commotion over to the side, pull the fire alarm, really anything to make the violence just stop and to switch the focus? You could also delegate for someone else to get involved. I would probably call the police if I saw people fighting instead of getting directly involved. That would be more my personality. But I think if every listener right now can take a minute to think, what would I do in that situation realistically, and acknowledge that whatever level that they can get involved is going to be helpful, even if they're not the person who's going to go up to an abusive situation directly, they can still make a difference by delegating to the police. You know, maybe you're in a bar and you just go tell the bartender that you see something going on. Ask for a bouncer to help. There's lots of other ways besides putting yourself physically in the middle of something.
Mm-hmm. Sergeant Lacey?
I would agree with that. And call us. You know, you don't have to. Whether she wants to report or doesn't want to report, we will take action if you call us. And then, you know, ask questions. If you see something that doesn't look right, you know, you can ask questions. If you see a teenage girl with an older man that does not appear to be a family member, ask some questions. You know, it's not going to hurt if you try to intervene. And then absolutely report. If it's a school situation, you know, talk to the teacher, talk to the counselors. There are lots of people that want to help, but people are almost too polite. They're afraid they're going to be considered nosy or butting in where they don't belong. But if you could save somebody from any kind of violence, it's going to be worth it.
I know that there's been times that I've seen women right here in town in situations that looked sketchy at best, and I've tried to talk directly to them.
Mm-hmm.
And if whoever is around them tries to intervene, I do my best to ignore that person and just connect with the woman and ask her if, you know, do you want to leave with me? Do you want me to call the police? Do you want some help? And get them to respond. And I know that because of the fact that their violence perpetrator is right next to them, they might not answer in a positive way. I still feel like it's important that
it's important to acknowledge it.
To acknowledge it, mm-hmm. but also let that woman know that you do have a choice. You can mm-hmm. decide at some point. I know that was part of our training when in the shelter that I was a volunteer at was that we did not tell women, you should do this or you should do mm-hmm. that. The whole idea was, don't transfer your power from that person to us, even though we're trying to help you. You need to take that power of your own, and you get to decide. That's the good news, is mm-hmm. you can decide. I want to talk a little bit about how drugs and alcohol play into this, but we have a caller, so we're going to hear from Nola in Skagway. Hi, Nola.
Hi.
You have a comment about the Mary Magdalene program?
I do. When many years ago, when my mother was... Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, I got some kind of feedback. When my mother was still alive many years ago, she was involved in a project in Southern California. Now, I know that's urban and not Alaska, but there's something I always remembered from hearing one of the organizers of that say, and she said, once a person was involved in their program, for 1 week, although the program itself was much longer, if they dropped out even after 1 week, they gained so much sense of self-awareness in that week that no matter what else they did, they did not return to the street. And that just stuck with me.
And this is the Mary Magdalene program you were discussing?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Nola, for that comment. I would have to say that sounds enormously optimistic, and I find it hard to believe that someone could turn around perhaps decades of abuse in a week's time, but wow, if they've got a program that can do that, more power to them. Melissa, what's been your experience? Do you know of the Mary Magdalene program what they're doing?
Yes, the Mary Magdalene program is a nonprofit here in Anchorage, but unfortunately they've recently dissolved, and so they're no longer providing services in Anchorage. I think there may be some national programs that have the same name, and I'm not aware of them. They did serve adult human trafficking victims, mostly women who were involved in prostitution, and they had a house where women who were trying to leave the life could live. AWAKE serves that population of women as well, and so it's important to know that although that program isn't providing services, AWAKE and then also STAR, Standing Together Against Rape in Anchorage, provide services. And all around the state, there are similar programs, and people can find that information with the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Mm-hmm. And Sergeant Lacey, are you finding that the women that are getting caught up in trafficking that are being either recruited from villages or from urban areas here in the state, are they staying in Alaska or are they getting sent to other places?
It depends. There's a circuit with the massage parlors where they're basically on a circuit. They'll be here, then they'll be sent to California, then they'll be sent to New York. That's kind of the typical circuit. The women that are working for a local trafficker here tend to stay in Anchorage, and we see them year after year after year. So it really kind of depends on what tier you're talking about. And we see a lot of the internet-facilitated prostitution. They oftentimes will come up here for just a weekend or around a special event or maybe a couple weekends a month and just work out of a hotel room and actually live in Oregon or Las Vegas.
It seems that, and this just might be my perception, but it seems like I'm seeing more massage parlors spring up around the city. Just the other day, I was driving down Northern Lights, and I thought, okay, I hadn't noticed that before.
Right?
Are there more? Are you seeing more?
There's been a kind of a consistent level of them here. And when we put pressure on them here, you'll see more of them pop up in Fairbanks, maybe down on the Kenai. You're starting to see them down on the Kenai where they don't have a full-time vice unit that can maybe address those issues. So they're always here. They always have been here, and they always will be here. They're very difficult for us to work.
Melissa, do you see women come into shelter from that have worked at the massage parlors, or are they cycling through?
We do, and you know, often people will come into shelter for just a day or two to get respite when things are at a particularly violent point, but will often return to the situation because, you know, there may be very few other resources. They may be dealing with some other complex issues like substance abuse issues. And there's a lack of treatment options in Anchorage. There's a real lack of housing in Anchorage. So things that would make it easier for people to live the life are often hard to come by in our community and around the state.
We're talking about violence against women, against children, against anyone, really, in our state. The numbers are terribly high. We'll be discussing what's available for help in that regard, and also what can be done, what we can all do. We'll talk about those things, and we'll take your calls as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com. And by photographer Brian Adams, with the opening of his exhibit and the release of his new book, I Am Alaskan, An Exploration of Identity, at the Alaska Native Arts Foundation, 5 p.m. Friday, November 1st.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, your host today, and we're talking about the very unpleasant topic of the high rates of violence against women and children in our state. In Alaska, we are consistently at the top in the nation in this dubious distinction, and we're talking today about why and hopefully getting to some ideas about what can happen to address them and how we can all help. My guests today in the studio are Sergeant Kathy Lacey, who is the head of the Vice Squad for APD, Anchorage Police Department, and Melissa Emmel, who is the deputy director, is that right? At the AWAKE shelter here in Anchorage. I wanted to talk just for a minute before we get on to what's available for help and treatment, and we had a good email question also that we'll get to, but what are the prominent drugs that and alcohol roles? How big is that role in violence within families and in prostitution crimes?
I can answer the prostitution one. Drugs are very prevalent. In particular, heroin is the drug of choice right now. It used to be crack cocaine for everyone. Now we're seeing just epidemic amounts of heroin. Again, it's a tool, a control tool that we see a lot. You know, you go out and do this date for me, I'll give you some drugs. Or a woman however it started first, she started prostituting first, then got hooked on the drugs and then used the prostitution as a way to pay for the drugs. But the substance abuse and alcohol, of course, with everyone, they go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. Melissa?
In terms of the population that we serve, what we often see are people who are using alcohol or other drugs to cope with the effects of the trauma on themselves. So they may start drinking heavily or using other drugs to just kind of cope with the day-to-day trauma and to kind of numb themselves out. And then it, you know, reaches the level of addiction. And once it gets to that level, abusers are very savvy at using that addiction to keep someone controlled. They may be the person who accesses the drugs for them. They may sort of dole out the drugs or alcohol to them in whatever amount or in whatever time frames they choose to keep that person even more controlled. And it certainly, in terms of the abuser being the one who's using, makes the danger level higher. So, you know, the violence can be a lot more severe if the abuser is high or drunk.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK is the number statewide, or 550-8422. 550-8422 in the Anchorage area, talk@alaskapublic.org. Human beings have always altered their state with one plant or whatever throughout mm-hmm. the ages. They've figured out a way to ferment things and and get high on something for as long as there's been human beings. But if there were some utopian society where you could take that out of the equation, how different would your jobs be? Would you say that, what's the percentage? Is it 80% of these crimes that are happening involve either drugs or alcohol, or how high is it?
I would say it's more like 99.9%.
In terms of the people we serve, it's still a high percentage, but I do want to clarify that alcohol and drugs don't cause abuse. And I think that I would still have a job if there was no alcohol or drugs in our state, because domestic violence is a learned behavior. It's about power and control, and substance use makes it worse, but it doesn't cause it. And so I think that's really important to clarify, particularly when you look at how do we address this issue. We can't only address it by addressing substance abuse.
Absolutely. I'm glad that you did clarify that, because it's important that people remember the responsibility lies with themselves, not you can't blame, oh, I was blacked out, or I wouldn't have done that if I hadn't been drinking. We had an email asking the question of what initiatives are happening in the state that are making a difference. This person wrote, "This is a great opportunity for the governor to appoint individuals to high-level decision-making positions that have the appropriate level of academic, clinical, and practical training. When the rates continue to get worse, I have concerns about who is at the helm." And she's asking, could your guests talk about where they see initiatives that are making a difference and why, and where the state has an opportunity to make improvements? Sergeant Lacey, you mentioned the Choose Respect campaign. We know Governor Parnell feels very strongly about violence in families. What else can and should be happening?
I think we've done a pretty good job with our laws. We've strengthened them and toughened them. The penalties are very stringent for human trafficking now. I think we've done a good job there, and with the support of the governor's office on making those changes. That being said, we still have got to identify and find our victims. And I think that's our biggest challenge right now, because this is, especially human trafficking, is very much a hidden crime. Nobody comes and self-reports and says, oh, I've been trafficked. That never happens. So I think that's where we need to put some emphasis. And Melissa mentioned it with community members. People have got to come forward. People have got to report. They've got to ask questions. They've got to look beneath the surface to find out what actually is going on there. So I don't think that we've got more laws that we can pass that's going to make this problem go away.
Melissa, ideas?
When I think about solving this problem, I kind of think about three things. Offenders need to be held accountable, so that means the law enforcement and the court systems need the resources. Victims need a place to get safe, so that means victim services need to stay strong. And then individual community members need to feel empowered, and they need to feel a sense of urgency to get involved and do something about this issue. A new initiative that's going to be launched in Anchorage and around the state in January is called the Green Dot. And it is a bystander prevention campaign aimed at talking to individual community members and getting them to understand real tangible ways to get involved. And the Council on Domestic Violence and the Office of the Governor are helping with that initiative, and I think it's going to hopefully turn the tide a bit on this issue.
Now, Sergeant Lacey, you mentioned strengthening the laws on human trafficking. Explain what's happened in that regard that has helped, and then also what is happening in the realm of men who engage in paying for the service of a prostitute. Are the laws, at one time it was a misdemeanor for...
It's still a misdemeanor. However, we made it a felony if you promote a woman for prostitution. So if you are facilitating that act, then now you're talking about a felony. But for just a man to go solicit a prostitute, it's still a misdemeanor. And for a woman to engage in prostitution, it's also a misdemeanor. So those laws haven't changed. And again, we need to focus on why these men are buying women for sex. It's sexual exploitation. Why are they doing it? The bigger picture is, why as a society do we just kind of look the other way? And we think it's okay. It's the world's oldest profession. Everybody's been doing it. Why are we punishing these men for doing that? So it's the whole prostitution picture. People are really uncomfortable with really looking at it too closely. They don't really want to think about it being sexual exploitation. They want to think that the woman is there willingly and wanting to do it. So I think that's the bigger issue.
The Julia Roberts syndrome, in other
exactly.
words. She did us no favors with that movie.
Exactly.
When you look at other places in the world, and as you mentioned, people say, oh, it's the oldest profession, mm-hmm. it's always been around. There are other countries where it's legal, and people that use that argument say, well, let's legalize it. That mm-hmm. way we can protect women, they'll be safer, there will be laws in place. What's your answer to that?
I get asked that a lot. Why don't we just legalize it? Why do we make it easier for men to make money off sexually exploiting women? That's the bottom line. Why would we want to do that? Is all you're doing is making it easier for him, and I say him because most of the times it is a male trafficker, but we do have women madams as well. Why would we make it easier for them to make a living and to make more money off somebody else's humiliation and degradation?
Mm-hmm.
And there is a component of a small minority vocal component of women that are in the sex trade that want it to be legalized. But they're not the norm. You know, the norm may be a 15-year-old girl of color who's been forced into this, and who's speaking for her. Mm-hmm. And if you legalize it, then you make it very easy for him to sell her wherever he wants to.
1-800-478-8255 is the number to call statewide. 550-8422 is the number in Anchorage. And right now we're going to hear from Katie in Homer, who has a comment on spanking children. Hi, Katie.
Hello. Yeah, it's totally illegal to hit your children when they're small, and yet it's against the law when they're adult. And it seems to me that children's brains are still forming, and they're still forming neurons, and when you're spanking them and humiliating them to get them to do what you want, which is what adults do to adults to get them to do what they want, it seems to me you're forming the threshold for behavior later on, and especially with boys, because boys are taught that they have to hold their emotions, and they can't cry, they can't express pain or fear. And I'm just wondering what your comments are on that, because it seems rather hypocritical. I mean, it's good that it's against the law to for adults to hit each other, but it seems we need to expand it and corporate punishment too for kids, and start treating children like humans. Humans need to have human rights. Children need to have human rights too. And if we start early, we can help solve this problem instead of making it worse by it being okay to hit children but not adults.
Thank you, Katie, for the call. Essentially, teaching people not to hit by hitting them isn't really a good idea. I was never struck as a child. I had parents who didn't believe in hitting, and a grandmother that was very close by that wouldn't have allowed it if it had happened. So, but I have to admit that I did spank my sons when they were boys. I would not ever do that now, if now that I'm older, if I have kids, I have grandchildren, and I would never put a hand on them in anger. What are your thoughts about discipline with children and how that translates into violence later in life?
Yeah, I think parenting is a very sensitive topic, and people have cultural values behind the way that they parent, but violence is a learned behavior at the root of it. And those cycles of power and control, those cycles of people feeling like their bodies are not their own and it's okay for other people to exert force over them, are things that often have roots in childhood. And so I think it's very important for people to think carefully if they're going to use any kind of physical punishment with their kids, to make sure that it's not actually abuse.
Mm-hmm. Sergeant Lacey, any comments about that?
I think Melissa did a great job with that question.
All right, we're going to take another call from Greg in Elfin Cove. Greg has a comment about reporting cases. Hi, Greg.
Hey.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for taking the call. I had a question in reference to where you have somebody reporting domestic violence, but not actually occurring, but just to get government benefits and such. I heard recently that you could use a whistleblower lawsuit when they're like using it to defraud the federal government. Could you clarify that for me?
We're having a hard time hearing you, Greg. I'm not exactly sure what you're asking there, but Melissa, do you have
an
idea?
I have an answer, sure. Hi, Greg. So what I would say is that domestic violence is already a very underreported crime. Most victims feel a lot of shame and guilt around their victimization, and so they aren't reporting. I think the number of people who are reporting anything to the police or to any agencies compared to the actual number of people that are experiencing abuse is very low, and I think that probably translates to human trafficking and sexual assault as well. So I think the myth that there's a ton of false reporters out there is just that, it's a myth.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or in the Anchorage area, 550-8422. 550-8422 is the number to call. We had an email from a listener who said, I have a 13-year-old daughter who is being cyber bullied and harassed by an adult. Mm-hmm. And she says, the police will not do anything because it is not against Alaska law for cyber bullying. She's having a difficult time. Any suggestions? Sergeant Lacey.
I would suggest that she call and talk to our cyber crimes unit. I'm not really familiar with the laws around that, but I would think that they could get some really good advice and some good direction by calling them and finding out exactly what's going on, if they've identified who's doing it and what they can do about it, because it is very prevalent now, the sexting, the cyberbullying, the social media pressure that kids are putting on each other, especially if it's an adult doing it to a juvenile.
Well, an adult harassing a juvenile like that, there's the very real risk that this person may try to meet with them.
Exactly.
We've had some cases right here in Anchorage and in Alaska where there have been people coming from outside to victimize children here that have been set up through cyber methods. So she should just call the Anchorage Police Department?
Yep, and talk to the cybercrimes.
What's the best number for her to just reach out and call?
786-8600.
786-8600. Hopefully you're listening and you can call and get some assistance. Let's talk about what's available and what people can do to help. Melissa, you mentioned the Green Dot campaign. Mm-hmm. Can you expand on that a little bit? And it kind of, I like the idea of looking at the positive in because it can be really overwhelming if we start looking at the statistics in our state. So talk a little more about that Green Dot campaign.
Yep. If you think about a map, a crime map with all the little red dots on it that indicate all the acts of human trafficking and domestic violence and sexual assault, the idea behind the Green Dot is what I mentioned before, that there are more of us who aren't committing acts of violence, there are more of us who care about this issue than those who are perpetrating violence. So if we all do something, even something small, we're going to see those rates go down, and that map can be covered with something else besides individual acts of violence. It can be covered with acts of people stepping up and helping someone they believe is being victimized. It can be individual acts of a sister talking to another sister and saying, hey, I'm worried about you. I'm noticing something is off in your relationship. Or a teacher at school, you know, taking a few moments to ask a child what's going on at home if they get that kind of gut feeling that something's off. If we're all doing those small acts, we will see these rates go down. And it's a matter of getting people to feel a sense of urgency to do it, that it really is life and death, that people are being hurt and killed, and we all have to do something now.
We just had a terrible case just last week in Chugiak of a murder-suicide. One of the realities of what happens when people not to blame anyone else, but there may have been opportunities along the way there for someone to do exactly as you're saying, just reach out and check in with someone, a woman in a distressing situation and see if they can find a way out. I know that a very similar program to this one that I did many years ago on another radio station, I had a woman call later and say, you know, you saved my life because I found some help. I found places to call where I could actually leave. And she didn't call immediately. It was months later. But she said that was the turning point for me. I realized that what I was experiencing wasn't right and that there was a different path that I could take. And it seems amazing, I'm sure, to some folks to consider that. What do you mean? you didn't realize it, it could be different. But if that's all you've known, if being slapped at the breakfast table is a common experience for someone, that becomes normal to them. And that might not have been our experience growing up, certainly wasn't mine, but I know that it is for some people, and that does become their reality.
And I think it's important to not be discouraged when you don't see an immediate result, especially with women involved in human trafficking. Is, you know, we'll contact them over and over again, and at some point they're going to reach their breaking point, their personal breaking point, where they're going to ask for help. So if you intervene or if you do anything, you know, don't just get discouraged because she doesn't just leave him right away. You have to be there, kind of a steady presence, to constantly be offering that support and that way out. And at some point, hopefully, they'll take advantage of it.
We'll be talking more about ways that people can help and what's available in the state currently and what may be on the horizon as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from the historic Anchorage Hotel, offering space for rehearsal dinners, engagement parties, business meetings, or social gatherings. A boutique hotel in the heart of downtown. HistoricAnchorageHotel.com. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnick Arm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Matsu Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at KinnickArmBridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
You're listening to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and today we're talking about violence against women and children and violence against men as well. Violence doesn't just happen to women, although overwhelmingly the numbers reveal that it's mostly women and children who are the victims of violent crime. One of the things that you said, Sergeant Lacey, before we went to the break was that people should not get discouraged when they try to help. They maybe offer assistance or ask a few questions and give a woman an idea of a different thing that she could be doing, and she ends up going back maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 times. I know that was my experience when I was a peer counselor, that we would say, you know, you can go back, or you can choose to stay here, you can choose to do different things. And we would watch a lot of women. It was sort of like practicing to finally get to the point where they could step away. And how important is it that people understand that sort of psychological dynamic that's going on there? I think part of it also is, even though it sounds strange, there's a comfort level in what you know, even if it's a violent, awful situation. I know that there are women who sort of plan the violent episodes, that if they know the buildup that's happening in their family, they can plan to send the kids to grandmother's house for the weekend and, you know, trigger or know that that's the time that it's going to happen and actually plan out the events. Mm-hmm. How important is that element for people who do want to help to really understand the psychology of that?
I think it's very important, because what we see from family and friends and community members who don't understand that is they get sort of compassion fatigue. They're sick of caring about it. They think the person's just going back and they're not doing anything. And then they may start to exhibit some controlling behaviors themselves, saying things like, well, if you're not going to leave him, then I can't be involved with you anymore, or I can't support you unless you leave him. And then what that creates is more isolation for that victim, who's probably not going to in that moment say, okay, I'm going to get divorced and, right, you know, the 5 kids and I are going to move out because you told me to. But what's most likely to happen is you're no longer a resource for that victim when it does get dangerous and it becomes unsafe for her and the kids and she needs help. She's not going to call you.
Mm-hmm. So you want to just keep that door open no matter how mm-hmm. frustrated you feel, making sure not to say you have to do this. Mm-hmm. Because you're cutting off choices and also maybe that pathway to conversation with that person when you do those
things. And you
things.
Might be making a real difference and you just don't know about it. Mm-hmm. You might have been the person that planted that seed mm-hmm. that at some point they're going to take advantage of it, but you're not seeing it. So you think, because she didn't walk out the door, you think you're not doing any good. But you may be making a real difference in that one person's life by just being there.
Well, we do have some callers on the line. We only have a few minutes left, but I'd like to just get to what's available and what is happening currently. Give us some messages of hope for what women and children can access for assistance.
Well, in Anchorage, the shelter that I work at is called Awake, and we operate a 24-hour crisis line. It is 907-272-0100. That is a 24-hour number available all the time. Around the state, anyone can also dial 211, and that's a statewide number that accesses people to information, referral, and resources for domestic violence, sexual assault, trafficking, but really any other issues. If people are struggling with housing or food resources, dialing 211 will access a lot of assistance for families.
We'll make sure and put those links on our website after the show this morning, so that if you're driving and you're wishing that you had a pen to write this down, know that the audio of the show and also those numbers will be available to you on our website, alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a quick call now from Charlie and Homer. Alcohol use. Charlie, quickly.
Yeah, since the state and the federal government make so much tax money off of alcohol, and since the American people apparently are going to figure out a way to change their consciousness one way or the other, even if it's a ball peen hammer to the head, how do we get the alcohol out of the equation? Because that's what's causing or is a catalyst to a lot of the problems we're having in society today, not just with the subject matter you folks are talking about with teenage kids growing up, et cetera. Thanks for a great show.
Thank you, Charlie.
Affordable and readily accessible treatment options for people would be a helpful solution.
Big step. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know that there's a lack of treatment beds in Anchorage. Is that being looked at? Is that being addressed in some way?
That's been a problem for as long as I can remember. Yeah. There's never enough beds. There's never enough substance abuse beds, for sure.
We did have an email also, someone saying that she had read recently about Chris Brown, the media figure, a singer, recounting that his early sexual experiences were at age 8. And the author of this article drew a connection between this and his violent nature toward women and song lyrics. Most men might, or some men might say that was just early sex and yippee, but for a young woman that would be considered a rape. Well, I guess
it's considered
we can't
rape if it happens to an 8-year-old boy,
yes,
too.
Exactly. I absolutely agree, and that needs to be part of the distinction that I think we need to make. Unfortunately, we're out of time. It's been a really productive program. We'll put some resources online. Thank you to my guests, Sergeant Kathy Lacey of APD and Melissa Emmel with Awake Shelter. Thank you to the callers. Thanks to Dave Waldron and Josh Edge on phones. I'm Lori Townsend. Steve Heim will be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Children need at least 60 minutes of physical activity each day for good health. So to help your children hit that mark, find fun ways to add more activity to their day. Go for a walk together. Sign up for events in your community. Make time to be physically active as a family. Get out and play with your kids every day. For activity ideas and tips on raising healthy kids in Alaska, visit playeveryday.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.